Hello, hello. This is Kathavani. Welcome back to another episode of Ramayana Ayodhya Khanda, episode 24. Bharata reacts and then acts. Thank you for listening. In the last episode, Bharata received the messengers from Ayodhya at his maternal grandfather's home in Kekaya kingdom. On hearing the message sent by Maharishi Vasishta, Ayodhya's chief guru, for the two princes to return home to Ayodhya right away, they wasted no time and traveled back with the messengers. The young prince arrived in Ayodhya with his brother Shatrughna and found it desolate and cheerless. He heard from his mother, Queen Kaikeyi, about his father, King Dasharatha's unexpected death due to Putra Shok and his brother Rama's exile. He was shocked to hear his mother pitching these events as favorable to him. Grief-stricken Bharata was devastated by his mother's avarice and disgraceful ploys to make him king. A virtuous prince, honorable and guileless, he roared in anguish, like a wounded lion in a mountain cave, says Rishi Valmiki. He declared that neither his father's untimely death nor his brother's exile were advantageous to him. Bharata blamed his mother for tormenting his kind and righteous father to an early grave. He accused her of dishonoring the traditions of the Ikshvaku race. He talked about Rama's love and respect for her and how he could imagine Rama accepting her demands without hesitation just to please her. He praised Rama's wisdom and strength, highlighting how his father, King Dasharatha, respected Rama's counsel and depended on him for discharging his monarchical duties. Bharata scorned Kaikeyi's ignorance and small-mindedness that led her to believe that he could or would want to rule the empire. He sympathized with Queens Kausalya and Sumitra, who would have been shattered by these sudden turn of events. Young Bharata left no doubt that he strongly opposed his mother's actions against King Dasharatha, the queens and his brothers. He stood up for Rama's rights to be installed as king as the eldest son per royal traditions of the Ikshvaku dynasty and in following their ancestors' model. Bharata remarked, even by his distinguished grandfather, Ashwapati, Kaikeyi's father's royal tradition, the eldest son inherited the kingdom. He condemned his mother for straying from conventions, sowing chaos, and bringing disgrace to both the dynasties by her petty greed and selfishness. He expressed his resolve to bring back Rama from his exile and consecrate him as king. To right all these wrongs done in his absence, he promised to serve his brother Rama. Bharata wisely feared he'd be associated with his mother's sinful actions. He was afraid that he would be seen as a conspirator who plotted with his mother to overthrow the king and usurp Rama's rights. He agonized over Kausalya's sorrow after losing her husband and seeing her only son exiled. He reminded Kaikeyi about the story of how Indra, the leader of the Devas, the gods, once saw the sacred cow, Kamadhenu, grieving. Kamadhenu, the divine giving cow, was endowed with the ability to fulfill others' wishes, provide for their welfare and for sacrifices, and she was respected as divine mother even by the gods. Affected by her sorrow, Indra rushed to her and bowed low and inquired what impending calamity caused this holy cow's grief. Kamadhenu responded that her two sons, bulls born from her body, were struggling under the burden of the plow and abused by the farmer driving the plow. Kamadhenu, despite her innumerable children and immense powers, was still moved as a mother to see two of her children, two strong bulls, in misery. Bharata highlighted Kausalya's pain and sorrow as the mother of only one son, Rama, was born after many years of prayers, sacrifices, and anticipation for an heir. He pitied how she had to give him up on the day of his consecration to be heir, and then endure the heartbreak of his banishment to the wild, dressed in bark, for no sin of hers or his. While struggling with her putrashok, loss of her son, she still had to care for the dying king, who then succumbed, unable to bear his bereavement from Rama. Bharata, recalling all this, scolded Kaikeyi, wondering how she, as a mother to one son, could ignore Kausalya's distress. His anger and grief unabated, Bharata declared that Kaikeyi would find no happiness in this life, hated by everyone around her for her sinful deeds, and that she would never reunite with his father in her afterlife either. He cursed that she would suffer in death and after. He cursed her demonic qualities that caused so much harm to everyone around her. He harshly vented that there was nothing Kaikeyi could do to repent her sins, and ending her life was the only recourse. He swore to bring Rama home to be king and announced that to right her sinful deeds that she tied him to, he'd take Rama's place, renouncing his princely rights and living as an ascetic in the Dandakaranya forest. Eventually, wishing to be nowhere near his mother and to be associated with her evil schemes that led to his father's untimely death, Bharata rose in anger and rushed to Kausalya's chambers to seek relief and solace. Kaikeyi tearfully fell to the ground, realizing all her carefully laid plans had actually worsened her situation and only alienated her son. By this time, the news spread that Bharata had returned to Ayodhya. Queen Kausalya, who was with Queen Sumitra, heard the news and wished to see the two princes, Bharata and Shatrughna, hoping their arrival would give them relief from their unending sorrow. No sooner did the queens prepare to leave their chambers, Bharata rushed into their chambers. He paid his respects and embraced Queen Kausalya like a child seeking comfort. In her troubled state, Queen Kausalya welcomed him to his kingdom that his mother Kaikeyi had won him so easily without war or bloodshed. This vast kingdom, with all of its abundance of wealth, grain, elephants, horses, and chariots, has been delivered to you by your mother. What you desired has been acquired without any obstacles. I still wonder what advantage did cruel Kaikeyi see in sending away my son to dwell in the forest wearing robes of bark. Kaikeyi would send us away too, to the forest, where Rama resides with Lakshmana and Sita. Or you, Bharata, can bring us where our sons are. Hearing these dreadful words, Bharata sank to the floor and tearfully hugged her legs. He reminded her that he'd been away in the Kekaya kingdom when all these evil deeds had transpired. He expressed his disagreements with his mother and most vehemently denounced his mother, equating her actions to vile sins. He listed the severe consequences to the persons who advised the exile of his brother, and that these would befall him as well if he had conspired against Rama. Here's a quick look at some of the sins listed by Bharata as grievously evil acts with dire results many thousands of years ago. Bharata ranted, "May the one who allowed the exile of my esteemed brother Rama be cursed with the consequences of the sins of serving the most sinful of men, the crime of not paying correct wages to a servant, the sin of disrespecting the son, the sin of kicking a sleeping cow or abusing elders. May they sustain the consequences of evil acts like killing a cow, murdering the king, queen, or young children. May those that sanction the exile of my righteous brother suffer the same consequences for committing the sin of treason against a fair monarch, or the sin of a king who doesn't protect his citizens after receiving a sixth of their income as tax. May they face the sins incurred by a warrior who doesn't fight, even though bestowed with all the weapons and cavalry. May they suffer in this life and after like a warrior who runs away at the peak of battle. May they sustain the same sin as that of a wealthy patron who doesn't donate to ascetics as promised for sacrifices to the gods. May those that sanctioned my brother's exile be cursed like the person who eats first without making offerings to gods, family, or guests. May they be cursed like the sinners who lust after another man's wife or forsakes one's own wife or children. May their suffering be that which befalls a disciple who destroys the intricate meanings of scriptures carefully taught by their gurus. May those that advised my brother's exile be discredited, like a person who forsakes his children and never sees them. May they be always miserable with too many sons, poverty, fever, and disease. May those who counseled my brother's exile suffer like the unmarried and those without suffering. May they lose their wealth and face the same consequences as those that have forsaken their parents, kings, gurus, and duties. May they be addicted to women, drinks, gambling, and other vices. May he practice unrighteousness and confer charity on the unworthy. May their wealth be snatched away by 1,000 thieves. May they be unfortunate like me, who was unable to see his mighty king on the throne on returning home. Hearing Bharata's unending, terrible curses against the persons who supported Rama's exile, and hearing his heartfelt support in favor of her beloved Rama, Queen Kausalya embraced him woefully as they cried together, united in their grief. In this chapter of Ayodhya Khanda, Maharishi Valmiki uses poetic meter and Bharata's words to list sinful actions that would give rise to eternal suffering in this birth and in many rebirths. He equates the decision to exile Rama to unspeakable crimes as well as moral and social offenses. Meanwhile, sage Vasishta, the chief guru of the clan, arrived at this scene and entreated Bharata to calm himself and perform his father's funeral rites without any more delay. King Dasharatha's mortal body was removed from the oil tub and prepared for cremation. Maharishi Valmiki describes quite vividly Bharata Shatrughna's grief. He provides great detail about the funeral, the preparations for the funeral, the materials gathered, the pyre of fragrant wood from the sandal, agaru and other native trees, other added fragrances, the funeral procession of many thousands walking through the city to the cremation grounds outside the city limits, and the cremation rituals performed by the princes under the guidance of the priests who were reciting Vedas and chanting the required mantras, incantations. After the princes lit the funeral platform with sacred fire, Dasharatha's queens, the nobles, ministers, and citizens of Ayodhya paid their respects, going around the blazing pyre on which the king's mortal body was engulfed in flames. The royal family, accompanied by their priests, offered water libations to the departed king on the banks of River Saraiyu, before returning to the city to pass the remaining mourning period of 10 days. On the 12th day, Bharata completed the Shraddha rites, post-cremation rituals, and donated gifts of goats, cows, clothes, and grains to the priests and Brahmins. On the 13th day, Bharata and Shatrughna returned to the site of the cremation under the guidance of priests to collect the ash for more rites. King Dasharatha's innumerable praises were sorrowfully expressed by all those gathered. Bharata and Shatrughna sang his praises during these last days' rituals. The last rites described in detail by Valmiki here have endured to this day, many thousands of years later. Every time Bharata and Shatrughna were overcome by despair, unable to perform the ritual spread across 2 weeks, sage Vasishtha was on hand to counsel them on the inevitability of birth and death, pain and pleasure, hunger and thirst in all lives. It is still believed, transcending these dualities that cause suffering and joy is the path to eternal bliss. With the support of advisors like Sumatra and other royal attendants, kinsmen and friends, the two princes tearfully completed their father's funeral rites. Afterwards, in their palace chambers, the distraught brothers were making plans to reunite with Rama and Lakshmana. Shatrughna wondered aloud to Bharata how the valiant Rama allowed himself to be exiled and questioned Lakshmana's decision to not fight for Rama's rights to be crown prince, as well as the king's wisdom in allowing Kaikeyi to interfere in state matters unjustly. Just then, Mantra, Kaikeyi's attendant, adorned in silken ornaments, showing her higher status, was walking past, surrounded by other maids. The guards in the vicinity who'd witnessed the brothers' anguish since their return seized her and brought her in front of Prince Shatrughna, blaming her for the current turmoil in the kingdom. Prince Shatrughna, his distress turned to fury at her sight, dragged her on the ground, denouncing her evil mind, and censured Kaikeyi's evil actions as well. The other maids ran to Kausalya's chambers to seek refuge from the angry prince. Kaikeyi, hearing Mantra's wails and of Mantra's capture, quickly approached her son, Bharata, and pleaded for his protection. Bharata calmly advised Shatrughna to release the evil Mantra and to act as Rama would in these circumstances. Women deserve our protection, brother, however evil their crime is, and they should not be slain. If Rama comes to know she was killed by us, he will certainly not talk to you or me again. Shatrughna angrily shoved Mantra towards Queen Kaikeyi, and the poor elder hunchback queen's maid landed in a heap on the floor. The queen gently soothed her shock and fear. The two women, who believed they'd be rewarded with titles and riches for their actions to make Bharata king, were stunned by the unexpected turn of events. Heedless as they had been of advice, single-mindedly focused on their own fears and status, they had failed to see the repercussions of their reckless actions. They were now shocked by the hatred directed against them by the two brothers and everyone else in the palace, who were all loyal to noble Rama. Over and over, we see how strong emotions, greed, fear, sorrow, disappointment, grief, to name a few, lead to anger and inappropriate words and actions. We see as well how a calm mind can quickly de-escalate the situation, showing tolerance, grace, and mercy, and how Rama, serene of mind and actions, was beloved and looked upon as an example of moral behavior by his younger brothers as well as older advisors. On the 14th day after the formal completion of the funeral rites, the advisors of the kingdom gathered to discuss next steps. They praised Dasharatha and his reign first, and then they turned to Prince Bharata, asking him to not delay, to be king, and to protect the kingdom. They informed Prince Bharata that all the materials required for his consecration as king were ready. Sage Vasishtha counseled Bharata that just as Rama relinquished his claim on the throne to follow his father's orders, he too had to accept the kingdom to uphold his father's promise. Bharata saw the assembled courtiers and the many vessels of holy water and other necessities for the sacred ceremonial fires. With reverence, he went around these sanctified items that were collected ceremoniously to bless his coronation. After showing his respects to the assembly, he spoke to the chief guru, Sage Vasishta. "Sir, it is tradition that the eldest son inherits the kingdom. Our eldest brother Rama will be king and I will live in the forest as an ascetic for 14 years. Turning to his chief minister Sumatra, he said, "Please make arrangements for our travel to the forest with the mighty division of the army. We can take these items you've collected, consecrate Rama and bring Rama home as the king. I will not fulfill the wishes of my mother that goes against parampara, tradition." As the news spread of Bharata's intentions to visit his brother, skilled workers, surveyors, builders, people with knowledge of the terrain, other experts, worksmiths, tradesmen, artisans, woodworkers, well diggers, and other craftsmen volunteered joyfully to go in advance with the army of workers employed by the administrators to lay the groundwork for a royal expedition to travel to the forest and bring Rama home. They carried their tools with them and cheerfully set out together to ready the path for the army that would go with the royal family and nobles to bring Rama back home. They organized themselves with architects, supervisors, workers, expert advisors, and planners, and they worked tirelessly for the worthy cause of bringing Rama home. They cleared the woods, paved the path, dug wells, set up comfortable rest areas, and thoughtfully cleared large areas for animals and large groups of people to camp, rest, and move around. Working tirelessly but joyously, with great efforts, they constructed the path to the banks of River Ganga, where Rama had stayed the first night with the citizens of Ayodhya. The next morning, Bharata was woken up like a king by palace attendants blowing conches, musicians playing morning ragas outside his door, and bards singing his praises as if he were king. Bharata ordered them to stop, exclaiming he was not the king. He later expressed his distress to his brother Shatrughna about how much harm Kaikeyi's thoughtless actions had caused and how the kingdom without a king at the helm was spinning out of control like a boat in a whirlpool. He lamented how easily people had accepted his mother's evil schemes and were now proclaiming him king. The young prince deeply mourned his father's absence and his brother Rama's exile. Meanwhile, once again, a great assembly of nobles, ministers of the administration, leaders of various groups of people, advisors, priests and gurus, including Sage Vasishta and Sumatra, gathered in the royal court. Messengers were sent to Bharata and Shatrughna. When Bharata entered the royal court, he was once again greeted and announced by the doorkeepers as if he were king, just as they had greeted King Dasharatha before. Sage Vasishta, the chief guru of the royal family, presiding over the gathering, wasted no time telling Bharata to be crowned king right away. Bharata, his voice choking with emotion, responded, "Sir, would any man assembled here take away a kingdom that rightfully belongs to virtuous Rama? Would a son born to Dasharatha usurp a kingdom? I and the king belong to Rama. Please speak the truth to me. If I commit this evil act, leading all those that follow me astray, none of us will deserve heaven, and I will bring disgrace to the Ikshvaku lineage. I will not accept my mother's evil ploys. Only Rama deserves to be king after my father." All those present were moved to tears by Bharata's assertions, expressing his loyalty to Rama. Bharata asked Sumatra, his chief minister, to ready the chariot so he could leave right away to where Rama lived. Sumitra, delighted by Bharata's resolve, left the court to carry out the orders to ready the army and the prince's chariots. As the news spread of the expedition underway to visit Rama and bring him back, Ayodhya rejoiced. As soon as Sumitra signaled the procession with his chariot was ready, Bharata boarded it with his brother Shatrughna and departed swiftly. Great warrior chiefs, nobles, and priests went ahead or followed Bharata and Shatrughna on horseback, elephants, and chariots, or carried in palanquins. The queens went too, excited to see Rama, and returned home with Rama, Sita, and Lakshmana. A division of the army followed Bharata. Citizens of the kingdom of various occupations, householders, priests, traders, goldsmiths, gem workers, jewelry makers, fishermen, farmers, weavers, weaponsmiths, guards, warriors, artists, artisans, and many others joyously joined this procession. They cheered the noble Bharata, who'd magnanimously relinquished the kingdom that had come to him with ease and was now making his way to give it back to his older brother Rama. Traveling in joyful anticipation of seeing Rama again, Bharata's entourage reached the banks of River Ganga close to Sringabharapura. Rama's friend Guha, chief of Nishadas, ruled this area. Bharata informed those following him to make arrangements to rest and be refreshed to cross the river the next morning. Guha, the chief of the Nishadas, had observed the royal banners and insignia carried by Bharata's army from a distance. Uncertain of Bharata's intentions, he prepared for the worst, to fight Bharata if his intentions were hostile towards his beloved Rama. He informed his men, strong warriors, to be ready to battle and protect their territory. These Nishada warriors, fully equipped, took up positions on 500 boats on the river, and many more took up positions armed all along the banks of River Ganga to protect their resources. Guha gathered fresh fruits, roots, fish, meat, and wine, and went ahead to greet Bharata with his bandhus, friends, and relatives. The chief minister, Sumitra, recognizing his friend Guha approaching their encampment with escorts, asked Bharata to give them audience right away. He believed Guha would know where Rama lived. Bharata too earnestly wished to see Guha right away. Guha greeted Bharata, welcoming the royal family to his territory and extending his invitation to Ayodhya's army. He signaled his attendants to carry forward the delicacies of roots, fruits, fish, meat, and wine as gifts to the prince and his armed retinue. Bharata expressed his appreciation and without further delay asked him how to cross the river and get to sage Bharadwaja's ashram, hermitage. Now Guha asked Bharata about his intentions, expressing his suspicions about his arrival with a large armed army. Bharata, without taking offense, calmly responded that, "Rama, my eldest brother, is like a father to me. I seek him to bring him back home." Guha was delighted to hear this. He exclaimed with happiness, "I see no equal to you. Your fame shall be everlasting and spread all over the world. Blessed indeed are you, Bharata, who are ready to renounce the kingdom that came to you." Bharata wanted to know everything about Rama's stay in the Sringabharapura region, and Guha was delighted to share all the details about Rama and Lakshmana's arrival, stay, and departure wearing matted hair. He talked about Rama, who didn't eat, fasting ritually that first night of their exile, about Lakshmana, who refused to sleep, standing guard, heartbroken to see his brother, and about Sita, the princess, who slept in the open without any complaints. These two upright leaders of men Bharata and Guha spent quite some time talking with each other, just like Guha had spent the whole night staying awake and talking to Lakshmana not too long ago. Bharata retired for the night but was unable to sleep with the anticipation of seeing Rama soon. The next morning, Guha made arrangements for the royal family and the army to cross the river. Not all of the people that followed Bharata could be transported in the numerous boats Guha and his men possessed. Some found rafts, made rafts, and some swam, but all were eager to cross the river to the other side. They gathered about on the other bank, rested for a while. Bharata removed his princely ornaments and crown, and only accompanied by his chief gurus, advisors, and priests, approached sage Bharadwaja's hermitage without any weapons. Bharata was delighted by the surroundings around the hermitage. As a show of respect, arriving close to the hermitage, he halted everyone and went ahead to meet sage Bharadwaja, only accompanied by his family's chief guru, Maharishi Vasishta. Maharishi Bharadwaja, who was seated surrounded by his disciples, rose and rushed to greet the esteemed Maharishi Vasishta. After Prince Bharata bowed low, paying his respect, the gentle sage welcomed Bharata, recognizing him immediately to be the late King Dasharatha's son and his beloved Rama's brother. In this episode, we've seen Bharata act without hesitation and without temptation and with respect. With certainty in his convictions and a calm purpose, Bharata performed his father's funeral rites, held strong against the pleas of the great assembly to be king, and traveled great distances to see Rama and make him king. In the next episode, we will see if noble Bharata's desires come true.